Okay, so before we get started on kind of what we have planned for today, let's talk about what we have coming up. So as of right now, you are scheduled to have a report to us by 5 p.m. on Friday. Okay. I want to clear up a couple of things about that report. I've got emails, a couple of you like referring to it as a rough draft and things like that. I think do not think of it in those terms. Okay. It's a draft in so much as we're going to review it with you after you submit it, right? But what you submit to us should be what you think is good enough to be the final report for that project. Okay, that clear that up a little bit. And the reason we want, and the reason you need a well-developed draft is if it's a rough draft and you haven't put any effort in it, we're not going to be able to really help you and provide guidance on what you're doing, which is the entire purpose of having that early report to turn into us. Right? So the more effort you put into that report, this initial report, right, initial version of this final report, the better we're going to be able to help you, and the more you're going to learn from that process. That kind of clear that piece up, piece of the puzzle? Okay. Now that you've heard that and gotten angry at me. So if this was due at 5 p.m. on Sunday instead of 5 p.m. on Friday, would that help you guys out some? Okay, we'll do that. 5 p.m. on Sunday. A couple more days to work on it. Okay. We'll have some class time today. We'll have some class time on Thursday to work on it as well. Use that class time. Right, there'll be, if you look at the schedule that's been up since the whole semester, right? We have scheduled workshop time built into the schedule for both this project and the final project. Right? And we'll give you the option to walk out of here if you want. Right, but that's your time to use here, and we're going to be here, and you can ask us questions and things like that. And once we get to the final project, the competition course and everything will be open generally for you to work on it then. So this workshop time, we have in-class workshop time for both this project and the final. Right, so use that time. Right. Okay, so 5 p.m. Sunday. I'll change that on the website when I get back to the office. All right. Make sure it's 5 p.m. Make sure it's named correctly. Make sure you copy, meaning CCing your teammates on the submission email. Now, that's just good professional practice if you have a small enough team, so they can see that whatever you're doing got turned in or submitted to the customer or whatever. Okay. If you have a big, huge team or are emailing a class list, for example, you might want to take that 50 emails and put them in the BCC field so that everything's not cluttered up and who you're actually directing the email to is there. But everyone on your team can see that it got submitted and things like that. Okay, so questions about what needs to be in that report? Yes, sir.
Like for the source of the spec for the spec sheet,
yep.
Like some are going to be the rules for the tournament itself, but like some will like surviving the impact. That's not really like a rule. It has to be the required. What would be like a source for that?
So the question is, hey, I have some in my engineering specification. I'm going to have some that have a source being the contest rules. And then there's others, and for example of the surviving the impact with the ground, it's not a contest rule, but you pretty much pretty obvious specification. So there's two things I would answer about that. So what's the source? Probably some type of engineering analysis, right? And is survive impact with the ground actually an engineering specification? Right, you need some numerical target. Right? So when you think about it, I have a customer requirement that it survives hitting the ground. Well, if I'm going to measure that, if I'm satisfying that customer requirement or not, right, my engineering characteristics, well, how could I measure whether this device would survive hitting the ground or not? I could maybe survive kind of shock loading. I could look at maybe even some kind of vibration test. I could probably measure something about the yield strength of the materials or whatever. Right, so there's three, four, five, seven things I may need to measure about this thing to know whether it will survive hitting the ground or not. Okay. Then I take each one of those measurements. Okay, what do they need to be in order to actually survive hitting the ground? That's what goes in the spec sheet. Right, so surviving impact with the ground is not a spec. Fulfilling all the requirements, all the measurements to fulfill that are the specs. Right, and those are all dictated by I need to survive hitting the ground. Yes, sir.
There's some.
Yes. So at the RLS web, so the recommendation at the RLS webpage, they have recommendations of a set of forces. You also, there's a link there to flight data from pretty much every year. Right? It's not every flight every year, but it's flight data from every year that gives you acceleration at launch, gives you acceleration of rocket splitting, gives acceleration, maximum velocity, maximum height, all this kind of information that's there for you. Okay. Other, I'm sorry. So the question was, do I need to have figures of the alternative designs? Almost certainly yes, right? Because you need, your reader needs to understand how those alternative designs would work, right? And that's really hard to do in just text. Okay? They quite often can have a little bit less detail or will have less detail than your chosen or recommended design, but there needs to be enough detail and enough information there for the reader to understand that this is a viable, true alternative, and then be able to compare that to what you're presenting as your final or chosen design. Right, so that what you want in that section is them to understand those two designs, and then when you present that evaluation against your chosen using the evaluation matrices, for them to kind of be nodding along with you, yeah, I see, I understand why what you're giving me is better than that. Yes, sir?
Yeah.
So let me try to answer that more generally, maybe. So how much detail do I need in my figures, basically is what you're asking, right? And that falls back on the same answer. There needs to be enough detail there where your reader can understand how it would work. The functionality is what we're really looking for. Right? And the things, I mean, you don't have to draw, for example, we don't need real, it's not detailed design, right? So the motor, a DC motor, could be a cylinder with a smaller cylinder representing the shaft coming out of it. It doesn't have to be a CAD model of a DC motor with all the bolts exactly right and the gearbox modeled exactly right, right? A battery can be a rectangle, right? So those kind of shapes are good enough to see, and we'll talk more about that today, how the thing would work, how it would piece together. They do need to be approximately to scale, right? But they don't need detailed design. You don't need to pick out bolt sizes. We're not asking you to choose a gear ratio or an exact battery, but you know exactly approximately what size an 11, 12-volt LiPo battery should be if you ever play with the RC car, right, or a drone or whatever. Right? So that's the level of detail we're asking. Okay, I need enough. The scaling's right. I can see how this would feasibly fit together if we're going to do a detailed design on it, and I understand how it would work. I see another hand up. So the question was about cost and time. Yeah, of course. I think every project has some cost associated with it. You can build one of these pretty cheaply. We spent probably $200 building these in the past. I think you probably have what you can plan for a budget a little bit above that if you want. But you can do a really, really nice one of these for $1,000 pretty easily. Every project on the planet has a limited time frame. Yeah. So you know when the launch is, right? Launch is every September. It's February. Planning for that.
Yeah, I mean, time of operation.
Time of operation. So the question was, do I need to worry about time of operation? What do you think? I heard a yes. Why yes?
Is it time to get to the
specific point? It's time to get to the specific point. We're going to have limited resources in terms of the battery life. Probably, so that's associated with how long you'll have to run. There's approximately, and could be up to an hour, if you read the rules, up to an hour between when you put your device in the rocket and when the rocket launches. Right? You could end up landing up to 12 kilometers, 15 kilometers away. Okay, if I'm going to go 15 kilometers, and I've spec'd out a maximum velocity, whatever you spec'd out, okay, that smears my runtime. Right, so that... What we just talked through is how you can get, even with pretty simple, that's back of the envelope calculations, you can get to bounds, initial specifications. And as we went down the process, that's you start refining those down to, okay, maybe I would need between 5 and 8 hours. Okay, given this exact motor, this exact battery, I would need 6.2 hours of runtime. Yes?
Should we make like a approximations when comparing alternative models in the custom evaluation sheet? Like, some models are going to have like different weight and stuff.
So I didn't hear the first part of that question. I'm sorry.
Like, do we make approximations based on like comparisons to the alternative designs? Because like things like weight, like, we haven't actually built the alternative designs, so we don't know how much they actually weigh.
Yeah, I mean, so the question was, do I need approximations on variety of device properties? Yes. Right, and that's the whole process, right? And at this point, in the conceptual design process, yeah, you're gonna have approximations, and you're early in your career, so the approximations are gonna be a little bit rough, right? But there needs to be some thought into what that approximation is, right? Back of the envelope physics, right? What's the density of a battery? Okay, I need a battery this size, whatever. What's the density of aluminum? We're saying aluminum frame, that means the weight would be this, right? You guys have the skills to do that. And that's actually a little bit of one difference. I talked to my, I have a senior design team this semester, talked with them this morning. In your spec sheet, right, you have some, you know, we're talking kind of high school, at minimum high school physics level evaluation to get to specs, right, back of the envelope calculations. They've done, they're a little bit farther along than you guys. They should have more information and have more engineering analysis skills, so those specs should be more refined. Right? Same thing is true when you go to the evaluation matrix. When you're saying our chosen design scored an 8 in this customer requirement against the alternative that scored a 5. It better not be, at that point in time, and that it's an 8 because we felt like it was better. It's an 8 because we did these calculations and the result was this, compared to the alternative where we did those calculations and it was this. Right. So some of the things in the evaluation matrix right now are going to feel like you're just kind of choosing based on what you think. But no, as you develop more engineering skill and engineering analysis expertise, those numbers better have some engineering analysis supporting them. Even now, you can get to some, you know, like we're saying, kind of rough calculations that give you the differences between. Yes, sir.
Is there a target for like things like house quality and number of rows and comms?
So the question was, how big does my house of quality need to be? It needs to be large enough to capture all the customer requirements. And that, sorry, that's the answer there. Yeah. What should the shape be? So I have N customer requirements. How many engineering characteristics do you think I have? I should have at least N, right? Because I'm going to have to probably measure one thing at least to get each one of my customer requirements. And more likely, I'm going to have to measure more than one thing to get some of them. So you have what, weak, medium, and strong correlation.
Yes.
So if you have, there's some of those things that will have no correlation. Yeah. So, you know, we talked through house of quality with the cell phone example. So maybe if I have a customer requirement that's bright screen and one that's speaker volume, right? And then some measures of those, they're probably not correlated really. So you have some that don't have, but you do want to look for blank rows and blank columns. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Is there any way to know how, actually ejecting the payload kind of operates? Is there some reference for that?
There's a video. You can find that video if you search Arliss on YouTube or something. I think that flight data I mentioned, I think, does have information on the rocket separation. I don't know that it has. It's like a black powder charge that blows the stuff, blows the pieces apart. So it's pretty violent.
Okay, that's pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, there was three measurements, 10, 12.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So it's a pretty quick process, right?
Yeah, virtually instantaneous. And then that can be particularly, if it's windy, that can be even more violent because, right, the rocket blows when it reaches apogee. So if it's windy, the rocket gets blown over and it's arching into the wind always. It still has forward velocity when it stops gaining height. So it still has forward velocity when it blows, and you get spit out at speed. So that's when it gets really violent. So you get 40 Gs, and then you're whatever, you're hauling butt forward. So you'll see teams in those circumstances get their parachute ripped off. It's not uncommon.
Is there an approximation for location, like distance from the rocket launch to the actual GPS location you have to go to?
The actual target location is usually between 1 and 2 kilometers from the launch site. But there's really no telling where you're going to be around that. It's just based on the winds, at the current winds. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Before the competition starts, before your vehicle, vehicle enters the rocket, are you going to have time to input GPS coordinates?
Yeah, you have the GPS coordinates ahead of time. The target is fixed for the whole week, so you drive up, you get those immediately. You can.
And is there any rule about using like an outside source to help operate your device?
So if you read the rules, So if you read the rules, they did add that in recent years, where you could have a base station, but it still has to be all autonomous. And you have to prove that. So most teams still do all processing on board, which I would encourage you guys to do as well. Other questions? Okay, so I'll get those from you guys by 5 p.m. on Sunday. All right. In the next few days, we're going to post a schedule. And we'll do 30-minute blocks, I think. 30-minute time blocks for you and your team to come meet with one of us next week, okay, to walk through your report, look at your design tools, and give you a chance to really ask questions and look at that in detail with us. Well, I'm not going to assign a block. I'm going to have blocks in your team. So what's going to happen? Your team needs to figure out a block within what we're offering that at least two of you can be there, and preferably all three. And if none work, then your team just get in touch with us and we'll figure something out. And in fact, we'll probably make you email us even if there's a time when only two of you can be there. Because we want all three, teams that are three, teams that are four, all, you know, most of you. We want all of you guys to meet with us, to be part of that meeting. So we'll have instructions for how to set up that meeting. So is there a greater meaning to the whole contest? It's meant to promote getting, you know, from the kind of education perspective, meant to promote students getting involved in aerospace activity. So all the skills that you would develop in building this ARLS and thinking about this design are the same skills you need to go to Mars, just on a different scale. All right, so you could think about landing somewhere in the desert and getting to target location like it would be to land on Mars or some other planet and get to some target location. Right? We didn't talk about it, but there's also a separate kind of category competition called a mission competition. So you're graded, kind of get judged on how well you do a mission that you specify. And you define what success is and failure and that kind of thing. So this is our specs for success. You launch a device. So for example, University of Tokyo, I think it was, a couple years back, they had a rover. And their mission was to set up a radio network on the desert. So the rover landed, it dropped a radio, drove out until the signal got weak, dropped a repeater, drove out until the signal got weak, then dropped a repeater. Right? So you can imagine that's something you'd have to do if you are launching robots ahead of humans trying to to land on a planet or other robots. Having that radio network set up is kind of necessary. So that's kind of that's the overall purpose. Other questions? Okay, so let's spend a few minutes today. Get a lot of questions about what kind of tools to use, what kind of drawing software we should use, those kind of things. So spend a few minutes talking about some recommendations. These are not, we're not dictating that you have to use these tools, right? But maybe help you out if you don't really know where to go. Okay. One thing I'm going to talk about first is trying to manage time, right? This class does get very busy for all of us, Ms. Hodge and me included. Okay, so I think you need some system. This is what I use. I like to recommend it. Just Getting Things Done is the book that this kind of comes out of. And basically, we'll talk later about management and planning tools, and you divide what you need to do into an actionable task. right? Learning Japanese, for example, is not an actionable task. Right? There's no way for me to estimate how long that's going to take. Right? Studying JLPT level 5 adverbs for 15 minutes. That's an actionable task. I can sit down and do that right now. And it has a time frame associated with it. Right? So when we talk about projects, whether they're personal projects or professional projects, when you're planning that out and trying to estimate duration, you need to think about it clearly enough to get down to actionable task. That's the only way you're going to get any kind of reasonable, any kind of estimate in duration or of time with any kind of reasonable accuracy. Okay. And basically from the personal perspective, like your mind trying to keep all your to-dos in your head, is your mind's not a good to-do system, right? So a computer, the software to do that, right? And then I group my tasks by also by kind of context. So I have a grouping within my software that I use for this. It's based on amount of focus required. So I have focus, dash, and dead are my three main categories. So things that will take some focus for me to do, things I can rattle off quickly, and things I can do if I'm brain dead and tired. So if it's 4 o'clock on a Friday and I'm brain dead and tired but don't want to sit in traffic going home, I can go to my brain dead and tired list and start checking off those things. Right? For example, I'm going to do inventory this afternoon after class. Okay. You also can categorize things by necessary tool or location or things like that. So I have tasks associated with being in my lab downstairs or seeing each one of my graduate students has and research students has a context associated with them in my list. So we'll see that some of this, these same ideas apply to kind of time management for team projects as well. There are also kind of lots and lots of software out there, a lot of it driven by the software industry for managing projects. Trello is a popular kind of free one that allows you to measure tasks among your team and track their progress. So you can share a Trello board. That's kind of how it works. Each task effectively gets a virtual post-it note that you can march through until it's done. Right, so it's one you can check out. If you're on a team project or even for yourself, I'm going to strongly recommend that you have some kind of system for managing your files and folders, right? Have some kind of system for how you name your files and folders. Don't have untitled 0 to 9,073. Okay. There's no way for you to find what you need then, right? And particularly if you're working with other people. There's no way to know who did before you. So we're going to talk about standardizing file names and folder structures. If you're doing any kind of software development, even the development of this class, I'm going to strongly recommend you have a versioning system in place. My lab does this. And also strongly recommend you back up your data. Okay. Actually had a student whose hard drive failed this morning. So we'll talk about that as well. File names and folders. This is a structure that my lab uses when we're writing papers. Okay, we don't have to do this. I'm just showing you kind of, we have this written out. This is our standard. And you see, companies will have this as well. This is our standard for how we name stuff. Right? Because it's important when you're working with other people, they know someone else is going to pick up this final report for your final project and look in this folder and start doing things. I know exactly what everything is because it's named in a certain way. I can contribute right away without having to figure out what's going on first. And what you did, what you named everything, what's where. Okay. So this can make the friction between your teammates a little bit less. This is also important, particularly when you kind of get out of here and get into a company, you're not going to be at a job forever. Right? At some point, you're likely to leave the job, you might get promoted within the same company, move to a different team, move companies, whatever. Right? Somebody at that company is going to have to follow on what you did. Right? And at some point in your career, you're going to be following what someone else did. So do yourself a favor and make it easy for that person. So hopefully the people are making it easy for you when you're new at a job too. So our folder for a paper looks like that. Right? Figures, sources, unused, that kind of thing. Okay, we won't get really into the details there. Software version tracking. We've already talked about all the code in this class is on a system called GitHub. What that lets us do is end up with file names that are not like this. And I'm sure a lot of us have had file names like this. File, final version one, really final this time, version two, final, finished. Okay? That's not version management, right? If you're using a professional kind of software version, you can use this for text documents as well. We use GitHub. But it manages those versions for you. Right? So you keep the same file name. The version history is saved in that tracking software. Right? So you make some edits to a paper or a piece of software, right? And all this is definitely not going to work. You can then roll back. Oh, what I had 3 days ago was working better than this. This idea wasn't that great. I can roll back to that time and move forward right from there. You also can have what's called branches in most of these systems for similar work, right? I know this guy's working. This is our production version, right? We want to try to implement these new features, but we don't want to mess up the production version while we're trying those out, right? So you can think of it as kind of a branch off. We're going to keep working in parallel to what's in production, trying to make it better. But don't change the one that's actually working yet until we can test it. Okay. These systems also tend to act as a pretty good backup. So my student this morning, he's back up and running already because we have all our software and things here. He had backups and we have this version control for our software. Okay. So most of these, you do the version tracking locally and then you can ping it up to a server. GitHub's free. Right? You have actually infinite private repositories as well now. So it's free. So if you're syncing up to that server, there's a backup of your software always. And again, we use this both for code and plain text. And like I said, we use it there. Okay. So there's GitHub. It's a GitHub website. Again, accounts are free. Our software in this class is there. Right? They also have a pretty nice pack of free stuff for students. So you might want to check that out. Some free applications. I think they'll actually send you some bags of stuff if you fill out the information. At least they used to. So maybe check it out. Okay. I mentioned hard drives die. They die a lot. So this is actually from a company called Backblaze, who has a backup service offsite, the one I use. So this is actually how hard drives tend to fail, right? So you get, first 18 months, you actually get a pretty high failure rate, as all the ones that have manufacturing defects effectively start dying out, right? Once you get past that initial phase, it flattens out for another 18 months or so. And then the actual, they start wearing out and start dying. Okay. So I show you this just to point out that hard drives die more frequently than you think, probably. Who's had a hard drive die? Anybody? Yeah, most of them. Okay. So if you see this and you're doing any data work, doing any work of value on a computer, this should scare you a little bit. All right. Yes, sir. They're probably a little bit less. I think you'll see the solid state probably is flatter back here. I think as you accumulate reads and writes on solid state, you'll end up having more trouble. But these drives are pretty well taken. Like these are in a server farm. These are not like in somebody's laptop or something. So they're pretty well taken care of, climate controlled and all that good stuff. Right. So that normalizes it a little bit. Yeah, so back up your data. Again, if you have anything of value, and most of us do have digital things of value at this point, right? Back it up. Okay. So you probably might hear this if you're thinking about heard backup stuff. Two is one and one is none. That means that one backup is not enough, really. Right? It's still just a single point of failure, effectively. So if you have Windows or Mac, there's pretty easy ways to automatically back up everything you have, right? So on the Mac, it's called Time Machine, right? Get a, 4 terabyte external drive, it's only about $100 now. I know that's a non-trivial amount of money for a student, but to back up your entire digital life, I think a good investment, right? And then for the Mac, if you had that drive and you just plug in Time Machine, it's just going to back up every hour your entire system, right? And you can roll back in time. Windows 10 now has a similar process, right? So you can assign an external hard drive as this is my backup drive, and then every time you plug in, it's just constantly backing up when it sees files changing. Okay. So, yeah, I have these backups both places. You can also have a backup, and I do this every night. I have a script to do this automatically that takes my hard drive and my Mac and makes a byte-for-byte clone of it on an external disk. Okay. So if my Mac drives, I can plug in that external drive and boot from it and have zero downtime until I have time to actually fix things. And then the best practice is to have one more backup that's off-site. You know, so your desk is below the bathroom of your upstairs apartment, your neighbor and their bathtub floods and drips all over your computer and your backup drives. You did a good job backing up, but you still lost everything. So you really want to have something else in a different location, or some natural disaster takes out your house or something, right? So the Backblaze is the one I use. Just backs up to their server, basically. So all of that, again, to say back up your stuff, right? General software tools. I think you guys probably all know this. You can get Office 365 for free as a student. I think you get a terabyte of OneDrive space. So there's a nice place for you to back up all your documents, at least while you're a student, for free. Okay. Our help desk also has a list of free software, right? A lot of it open source and free. It's free. Okay. And then Autodesk has been really pushing into education recently and has free versions of a lot of its software as well for students. You can get academic licenses. When we get to our mechatronics kit, we're actually going to make a small shift this semester. We're moving to Microsoft Visual Studio Code, away from GitHub Atom. They made a lot of progress in the last 18 months, and it's probably the best plain text editor for editing Python, arguably. So I recommend you grab that guy, and then we'll use another piece of software called CoolTurn. And we'll talk about those in a lot more detail coming up in a couple weeks. Questions so far? Okay. So when we're generating figures, let's kind of get into the tips and tricks part. There's some tools for you. What we want our figures to end up, before we insert them in our document or in our presentation, to be in a format that's a vector graphics format. Okay. And basically what that means is that there's a vector representation of what's drawn saved as the figure. Right. I'm not saving kind of a pixel by pixel map of what's there. Right. I'm saving this as a line of this color. Right. So what that means is it can scale up and down, right, indefinitely and remain crisp. That line is always still just a line. Right. What you want to avoid in the pixel by pixel version is called a bitmap. Right. You're mapping the bits of the image to be a color or darkness. And when you zoom in on that, you start to see those pixels. So bitmap-based file types, JPEG is one. There's also JPEG compression. JPEG is not a lossless format. PNG, of course, the old-school bitmap. Okay. And where these most often show up for you guys is you take a screenshot of something and think that's going to be good enough for your report. It's not. Okay. Learn to use the proper export stuff from whatever software package or CAD package or whatever you're using. Okay. A screenshot of a CAD render, that's terrible. Right? There is a dedicated export function there that's going to preserve quality and look way better than you trying to take a screenshot of it. Okay. So there will be a case sometimes, as an absolute last resort, I don't know how to get this out any other way. There's no export button. There's no other way for me to go. I can't copy this as a vector graphics format, whatever. It has to be an absolute last resort, though, because it's going to be one of these formats and therefore low quality. Yes, sir?
But if you're saving like a document as a PDF, does it still end up putting it back as a bitmap?
No, PDF's vector. Okay. If it contains a bitmapped image, it will be bitmapped into PDF. If it's a vector image, it will be vector in a PDF. And we'll see that in just a second. Or you can see that in every PDF in this class. Zoom into the figures and tables and stuff. You can zoom in and zoom in and zoom in, and it's going to be crystal clear. Yeah. Yes, sir?
So any images, we could save them as a PDF, and they would
Not necessarily. So if you had a JPEG and then saved it as a PDF, which can be a vector graphics format, right? You can't go this way. It's still just bitmapped, right? But quite often, the drawing software, and we'll talk about an application you may be able to use in a second, you want to save as vector graphics natively, and then if you go to a PDF, it will say CRISP. Other questions? Okay. So some software to do this. The free open source, available Mac, Linux, Windows, vector graphics drawing, that's probably most or best tailored to what the kind of stuff we're talking about here, drawing cylinders and cuboids. Right? It's called Inkscape. There's a download link, there's tutorials. It can save as what's called SVG, scalable vector graphics extension. And we'll export to PDF for you to insert into whatever you need to insert in. And it can get complex, but again, for what you need to do in this class, it's not. Okay. So that's one recommendation for you looking to draw your conceptual level figures. If you're interested in starting to learn CAD or CAD-like drawings, I mentioned Autodesk, right? So Autodesk has a version of Fusion 360. That's free for students. Right. Could go there. You don't have to. Again, we don't need CAD renders of your figure of your designs. Okay. And then SketchUp and Tinkercad are also two free open source kind of beginner CAD programs. Okay. So, one common thing people ask about is, hey, how do I get a table that I've drawn in Excel, my spec sheet, for example, how do I get this into Word in a way that's not all fuzzy by the time it gets into Word? Okay, and then from Word to PDF, right? So let's start looking at the Mac first, right? So I'm going to take the cells that I want and just, and then we'll copy command, we'll get you there on the Mac. And then if you go into Word on the Mac, you want to go edit and paste special, okay? And then you can paste as a PDF. And since the Mac natively supports PDF, you got a PDF when you copy it anyway. You got a vector format one when you copy it anyway. Okay. On Windows, you can select the same table. You can go copy. Then in Word, you'll notice the paste button over here has that little drawdown arrow. So if you open that kind of extra menu there, right, and select paste special, what you want to pick on Windows is Picture Enhanced Metafile. Okay. I know it's a little bit small to see, but these notes will be up after class as usual. Okay. So that's how you can get a table into Word and it remain nice, crisp, and clear for you. Don't screenshot it, please. Okay. And you can see the difference here a little bit. I think you'll be able to see it clear if you look at these notes after class. So this first one was inserted as a PDF. This was inserted from a screenshot. So you can start, probably you can see a little bit, the, maybe the four here, some pixelation there, where this is nice and crisp. And you, again, you can see it even better if you check the, note, check the notes after class. So we want this, not that. Okay. Hey, I got nice captions on these. Where do the table captions go? Where'd they go? Table numbers go above the table. You can center, you can have left format, as long as you're consistent. Okay. Where do figure numbers and captions go? Below the figure. Okay. As a general rule of thumb, for this class at least, if you made it in Excel, it's probably a table. If you made it somewhere else, it's probably a figure. Okay. So house of quality is what? Table. Spec sheets, what? Table. Evaluation matrix? Table. Function tree? Figure. Right. Drawings of your device? Figures. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. So, if you want to insert captions, right? Mac, one either Mac or Windows, what you want to do is make sure that you make your captions in the document preparation software, not in your drawing software or in Excel. Okay, so if you're writing in Word, which is what we're showing right now, make the caption in Word. Don't make it in AutoCAD or whatever. All right? So in Word on the Mac, you just right-click on the object, and there's Insert Caption option there. Okay. Tell it whether it's a table or figure, and make sure you type in a descriptive caption after the number. Okay. Click OK, and you end up with a process that looks like this. Right? So I right-clicked on my table here. It automatically figured out that was the second one. Right? If you've edited your document in Word, you're probably going to have to go back and fix these. Okay? But at least the first time through, it'll try to figure out which table it is. You're going to need to add your descriptive caption. It will just give you table and the number or figure and the number. You have to go up to that box and type in your caption. Okay. And if you tell it to the table, it's automatically going to put it above. Right. Click OK, and it will add it there for you. Okay. And then basically the same process in Windows. That's not any different, really. And looks, you know, right-click, insert caption. You get this dialog box in Windows. Make sure you add your caption, descriptive title, click OK. Questions about that process? I've been doing that a lot. Okay. We talked a little bit about this, but I want to at least make it explicit. Another document preparation option. My lab uses it exclusively. It's really popular in kind of academic circles, at least. This is document preparation software called LaTeX. And really, it's kind of like a programming language for writing documents and formatting documents. Right? There's lots of help to use it online. The basic stuff, like you would need to do in this class, write the document, have section headings, include figures and tables, is totally easy. Right? It's a professional typesetting system, though. So you can run it locally, or there's a collaborative environment called Overleaf that works really similar to how Google Docs works. Right? Sign up for an account, create your document there. You can share it with teammates. You all can work on the document in one place. Okay. And then we have a template there at the Overleaf, which linked from the class website as well. All right, so if you go from the class website, see if I can pull that up for you, show you where it's at. There's our class site. So here's our template, the LaTeX source and the PDF of the template. If you click on that, it will bounce you to Overleaf and open the template. And you can start editing right away if you want. And then if you need to want to save it, come back to it later, you're going to have to need a free account and everything. You can create one and save it.
Can you lay Word in?
You can copy and paste from Word in there, probably. It's the way to go, maybe, if you wanted to start in a Word doc. But there's, you know, you can, in Overleaf, you can write in the kind of pure LaTeX style. They also have a separate mode that's kind of a mixed of how you would do it in Word in terms of selecting and making bold and stuff and the typesetting language. Yes, sir?
Is it easier to do page numbers than Microsoft Word?
I would argue yes, it is.
Yeah, I found it easier.
Yeah? And in fact, our template already takes care of that for you, actually. So it's there for you if you use our template. It's already set up. While we're here, we'll come back to this in a few slides, just make sure to point out to you while we're on the web page. There's also, whoops, that's not what I want. I'm trying to make it easy to highlight stuff for you. We have, okay then, try to be too fancy, I guess. Not working. All right. I have a zip file that has example reports from past semesters. Give you an idea. There's different categories of good, great, fair, poor. Right. Examples of each. Okay. There is that pre-submission checklist. Right. And again, that's the first thing we're going to run down when we look at your reports. Right. Make sure you take a look at that. I would take a look at that, not just pre-submission, but pre-document preparation. You probably want to take a look at that as well. You know, that way you're correcting problems on the front side rather than having to do it later or avoiding problems.
If you read the outline, it does
exactly. What's that?
If you go by the outline.
Yeah, I think so.
Exactly.
Right. That's, yeah. Thank you. The outline, every assignment we have has an outline on the last page. Right. If you follow that, you're going to be in okay shape in terms of the organization at least. Thank you for that. And then you won't need it for a couple weeks, but there's video presentation guidelines and then a link to past presentations as well. If you want to take a look at past all those presentations. Yes, sir?
Using the Vimeo and looking at it, could you just like
Could that be a good way to understand what to write and how to write it?
Start with the presentation?
Yeah.
Maybe. I think I'll be a high school English teacher for a minute. I think start with the outline I provide you, and then add detail to that to something my lab kind of calls a fat outline, where it's not just bullet point outlines. It's here's the bullet point. Okay, here's an out, even more detail about what I'm really going to say to support that bullet. So it's not just bullet point outline. It's starting to look somewhere between a true outline and a report. What's going to follow? So the presentation should follow the same outline. Yeah, you're right about that. And like we talked about, kind of the technical documentation lectures a while ago now, right? That you are probably going to need presentation-specific versions of your tools, right? It's PowerPoint file. You'll see most, if you look at those presentations, most of those students are just doing voiceovers on PowerPoint. It's built into PowerPoint. You can do that. Built into Keynote on the Mac. You can do a voiceover of your slides as you talk through them. So record your voice as you're running through the slides. You're more than welcome to find a room that's open without a class in it and videotape yourself presenting as well. I haven't seen anybody do that yet, but it's an option. And I think actually a decent option for the final presentation, because then you could have your design there and show it, which no one's taken advantage of, unfortunately. It's a good way to present a design, is to actually show it. And then while we're here as well, I mentioned GitHub. All this code here is on GitHub ready for you to use in this class. And we'll talk about that. And then most of them also have some explanation of why the code is what it is and a sketch of how you need to plug in the wires to run that code. So a lot of there, we'll be adding to this list over the course of when we start the mechatronics things in a few weeks. Using your kit. Okay. Other questions? All right, back to the presentation. So, there's our template. And we kind of talked through these other resources already. Right, so the presentation checklist. There's also some templates for the design tools if you haven't found those. Pointed them out before, but if not, we have design tool templates, so templates for spec sheet, house of quality, and evaluation matrix. Questions? Anything to add? Tools, trips. Okay, so we have about an hour of class time remaining. I strongly encourage you to get with your artist team. Okay, we're going to bounce around and talk to you guys. Do not leave until you've talked to one of us as a team. All right?